What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to another Wednesday afternoon. This is the remake of The Magnificent Seven, directed by the genius filmmaker Antoine Fuqua. Hang out with us, guys. We're going to break down the whole thing for you. We have a ton of fun games to play today. We'll see you in just a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Oh! It's the remix! We're back! It's training day! We're doing it again! The bait and switch, guys. We've decided to abandon the Magnificent Seven and cover training day again.
Once again.
Just kidding, guys.
This is The Office. I didn't even realize, like, until the both of them were on screen together, I was like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Training day.
You're like, there's a reason we did training day.
I don't know what it was. I'm slow.
Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie related. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined today by my excellently dressed co-host, Mr. Andrew Guy.
95 cents for pennies.
Hey, I'm here. You know what? I had a very interesting morning.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk about it because, you know what? I need a platform to discuss my feelings.
Where can the people find you if they want to chime in?
Oh, yeah. You guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter or on Instagram. And I've got the live chat going today.
So you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media also, and the podcast, of course, at AMA Podcast. Yeah. Go ahead, Drew. The floor is yours.
The floor is mine. Okay, so this actually sparked a new segment for the show that we're going to talk about a little bit later that I'm going to talk about. I literally just dropped this bomb on Ben.
You haven't had a discussion about this at all.
Not at all. If he doesn't want to do it, it's too bad. We're going to do it today. I lost my keys in the gym, and the people at the front desk, not only were they incredibly unhelpful, they were rude, and they refused to use the intercom to call to ask if anyone had found a set of lost keys.
No, this is unacceptable.
This is unacceptable. So I was pretty upset, but I was like, okay, cool. So they're like, you can talk to our manager when she gets back. She comes back 20 minutes later. Long story short, immediately goes to the intercom, calls, and the trainer from upstairs yells down, oh yeah, I've got him up here. I was just waiting until I was done with my session to bring him down. 30 minutes. That's why we started late today, so I apologize. And that sparked a new segment on the show called AM Angry. Hashtag AM Angry. And this isn't just because I was having a rough day. I think this is a good idea because there's moments in movies where you're watching it, even movies that you love. Maybe not love, movies that you really like.
Yeah.
And you see something that happens in it, and it's not something that you're like actually angry about. I just like to play on words with our title.
AM Angry?
AM Angry.
It's clever.
It's clever. It's very clever. Thank you. I was waiting for you to say something. But it's going to be something that happens in a movie where you kind of watch and you're like, oh, God damn it, man. Really? Come on. Either it could be something cliche or something right. You saw coming, or a twist that you think was completely unnecessary, or a character. I mean, sometimes you and I have this discussion about Interstellar.
Yeah.
And how even though Matt Damon's part in the film feels necessary because the movie would stagnate for too long, I think.
Right.
It's kind of one of those things like, why does he have to be a bad guy? Why does he have to be an asshole? Like, it's not that you were angry, but maybe that might be your hashtag am angry if
like,
we were to do
Interstellar.
What is
Matt Damon doing in this movie? He wasn't even billed. Why him? Yeah, yeah,
could
right.
be anyone. So that's a segment that I want to talk about later on the show. And let's get back to the normal show. Thank you for venting.
Thank you!
Thank you for letting me have my moment,
thank
everybody.
You. I had something I wanted to add.
I should have done the whole thing in Vincent D'Onofrio's voice.
So guys, Action Movie Anatomy is a show that we talk about action movies. This is episode 73, maybe, something like that.
I feel like we're higher than that, but yeah, it's got to be right around there.
We're into the mid-70s now. This is The Magnificent Seven, the remake of... Well, it's like a third edition remake. So
yes.
There's The Magnificent Seven in 1960, which is a remake of the 1954 movie, The Seven Samurai, by Akira mm-hmm. Kurosawa.
Yes.
Now, they waited 56 years to make another remake of the same movie, and they chose visionary director Antoine Fuqua. And a stellar cast. Now, it brings an interesting point to question, which is how classic of a movie really is Magnificent Seven? I know that Seven Samurai is considered to be an all-time classic.
Yes.
But The Magnificent Seven, Yul Brynner, Charles Bronson, mm-hmm. like, it. I don't know how much of a classic that movie is considered more than it's like...
It's like got a James... No, is it James Dean or
Steve
Paul?
McQueen.
Steve McQueen,
yeah.
Excuse me.
And it's, you know, it's always referenced as like a fun sort of adventure movie. But mm-hmm. we're so far removed from that movie that I think a younger generation that knows it as like a famous movie they would remake thinks of it probably as more classic than it really is. Now, we're not here to talk about the original film, But it does beg the question, when you make a popcorn flick like this with this kind of a cast and this kind of a director, is it doing the original film a disservice by taking it in that direction? Or is this movie more similar to the original than people realize? Was the original just kind of a trashy action movie?
That's an interesting point. So Seven Samurai, I'll admit I haven't seen it.
Right.
Magnificent Seven, I think I've seen maybe once. Maybe.
I saw both of them in middle school. Okay. And I saw them close to each other.
Yeah, and it was, you know, like, so I'm saying maybe it could have been 15, 20 years ago. I think that this is actually, it does a service to the films in the sense that, you're right, people our age had no idea that you hear Magnificent Seven, it's kind of something that rings in your head like, oh, I should know something. That sounds like something right. I know about. But no one of the younger generation, and a lot of people our generation, didn't even watch the movie. So even if this movie is good or bad, which we were going to discuss on this show, I think that it's going to get people to go back and watch. I want to go watch the original more now than I ever did before.
Certainly true. So, guys, the movies that we cover on this show usually adhere to four basic rules. Aside from being made after 1981, rule number one is the hero always plays to their own rules. If you put Denzel in a movie, that's just going to be taken care of. No question.
Yes.
Denzel would never, ever, ever sign on to play a role in a movie that he didn't play by his own rules.
No, never.
No. Like, in his fucking contract.
Yeah, like, Crimson Tide is the only thing where, in the beginning, you kind of see that he's like, in a subordinate position, which you never even see that.
Yeah, but he's 100% going to play by his own rules.
And then he 100% yeah, exactly. So, always, Denzel plays by his own rules.
Number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. They make the villain in this movie, Peter Skarsgård, kind of a bitch. He just, like, doesn't really... He's one of these cardboard villains where he's not particularly smart, he's just evil.
Yeah, he's just pure evil.
Which I think is actually a little bit of a fail on the movie's part.
I do, too. I really do, too, especially because they have this rich backstory. Spoiler alert, by the way. This whole thing is a spoiler alert. I feel like we've already ruined so much.
Yeah, but, I mean, you guys don't watch the episode unless you haven't seen the Magnificent Seven.
My point behind this is that, like, there is such a rich, evil backstory behind why Chisholm is after him the whole movie.
Right.
That they try to kind of, like, hide... they don't want to allude to it. That I think that's the misstep right there. Like you're saying, they make him just like this evil, just filler. The story that they have with, like, Denzel being hung and his mother being raped and his sisters being murdered, tell us about that. Show us that to make me really hate him.
Because by the time you find out about it, it's just like...
It's the end.
Yeah. It's like, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I would say that he is definitely the smartest guy in the room, but is Bo the smartest guy in the room? I mean, I guess there isn't another character that is.
I guess he has to be, because if A is B, then B is C, then A is C. So he has enough money to live in this mansion in Sacramento, and he can hire hundreds of men.
I was never told there'd be math.
I never told him I cannot do this. So I guess, cause and effect, he must be the smartest guy in the room because he's the richest guy.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
I mean, there's not another villain who's smarter. So,
yes, absolutely.
We'll give you that they are the two smartest. Three, the movie is driven by a police, military, or political figure. So he's a peace officer, so he is kind of a police.
Duly appointed.
But he's also kind of a mercenary because he's taking the job for money. So it's sort of both.
Yeah.
I would say that, 100%. And the movie contains minimum one explosion. There's a bunch of dynamite.
There's several. I always wanted to blow something up.
And an explosion of D'Onofrio.
And an I should have told... Dude.
Unbelievable. Like, the through and through, guys, if you're just like, I'm going to watch these guys do this episode to see if I want to see this movie or not.
Yeah.
You just see it for D'Onofrio.
You got to see this movie.
Just for that reason.
He's got a couple of moments in this film that are just brilliant.
We have Marissa Serafini in the booth. She's engineering the show today. Marissa, how
are
you doing?
Marissa?
What's up, guys?
So you're going to go see this movie, like, tonight or tomorrow, is what you said, right?
Yep.
So we're ruining the movie for you right now.
You know what? That's okay.
We've done this for Marissa a few times, and Marissa, we just love you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I love you guys.
Thanks for doing the show.
Where can the people find you, Marissa?
You can follow me on Twitter, @SerafiniTV, and I'm excited to see D'Onofrio, you know, explode.
Yeah. Have you seen Salt and Sea?
I have not.
Okay, so neither has Ben, and I, up until just like a couple months ago, hadn't seen it either, and our friends have been raving about this movie. They think it should be on the show, and it probably will be eventually.
Is it action enough?
Actually, that's the problem. I think it's mainly drama. Yeah. But he's got this crazy voice.
He does it in that, too.
But it's more of because his nose, he used to do so much, I think it's cocaine, that his nose, they had to cut it off. So it's like there's a reason
in
why.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Got it.
Whereas in this film... It's just a wild choice.
He's just a bear of a man.
Yeah, that bear was wearing people clothes.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, that is what we do on the show here. We talk about action movies, and this is The Magnificent Seven. So I think without further ado, we will cue up the trailer, and we will... It's a pretty entertaining trailer.
Yeah.
It's very, like, modern-day trailer. It's like kind of rock and roll cowboys.
Modern-day Western.
Sam Chisholm. I mean, they all have different names in the original film.
Man carries a gun, he tends to use it.
Dan, you dead? Pity.
I had just ordered a drink from that man.
Took a job, looking for some men to join me.
Is it difficult?
Impossible.
Impossible.
How many you got so far?
You and me.
Who's she?
We work for her.
Good Lord.
That's right.
Did you love her, or did you... How did you feel about her?
She was fine. I thought she was attractive. Yeah. Did a fine job.
Take everything we have.
You know?
So you seek revenge.
I seek righteousness.
One of the good lines.
But I'll take revenge.
Yeah. More than a few to help us fight.
What a bunch of misfits we are.
You know how to shoot that thing?
I'm good.
So am I.
It's got, like... It's a very similar trailer to Hateful Eight in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It feels almost identical.
Should we do Hateful Eight on this show?
Probably. I never watched it.
Oh. I barely remember it.
The warrior. The Indian warrior.
We got seven.
He's got an army.
And they'll be murdered by the world's greatest lover.
That's my favorite line.
That's a great line.
That's a great line. Fighting someone else's fight.
These people deserve their lives back.
Just make sure we're fighting the battle in front of us, not the battle behind.
Every man's got the right to choose where he dies.
We have nowhere else to go, so...
I liked everyone in the cast.
Yeah,
I thought everybody was solid.
Yeah.
Ethan Hawke felt a little, like, tired.
Loose.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's also, like... They, like, write his character to be that way a little bit.
I get that. I get that.
But I'm always going to blow something
lazy,
up.
Maybe. Yeah, he just felt like kind of decrepit and old in the way that some of the other guys didn't. He kind of never really had any badass moments, which is hard.
Yeah, the only badass moment that he had is all based off of assumption.
Yeah.
When they take over that mining town, and it's like shot, 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 all perfect.
Yeah.
But they never say who it is. You just assume it's him.
Yeah, right. And I don't think it is him, because he wouldn't kill anybody until the end of the movie.
Right, and right before that was when he shows them shooting the dummy, finally.
Yeah.
That is kind of lame.
Yeah. So he's kind of the loose one. But, I mean, you don't need... Well, anyway, we will get into that.
The trailer is very similar to the Hateful Eight trailer. Audience, if you guys are out there, feel free to tweet at AMA Podcast or put up in the live chat if you know if that's the same editor. That was remarkably similar.
It's like the same trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all the same, like the numbers, the shots.
I was going to say, even the
music,
counting. Yeah.
The counting. It's like they're like labeling each character.
That was a very good observation, Ben.
Yeah, what can I say? let's move into thesis statement, guys. So this is your thought, your bold thought on the movie. Should be like rooted in hyperbole, a strong assessment of the film.
Yeah.
Should not be anything loose. My favorite, this should be the greatest this, the best this. This is the reason for this. And we like to have one of these in every one of our movies, and we kind of defend it throughout. I kind of alluded to mine already, so I'll continue on it. And that is...
Anton Foucault is the greatest director of our generation.
And that is that I think that the choice to put Antoine Fuqua directing this movie at this point in his career, when it's clear what kind of movies he makes, is a direct assessment of the quality of the original film. And I think downgrades the original film from being a true classic to just a period piece adventure movie from its time. And I think it actually reflects negatively on the original movie, because I didn't think this was a bad movie. I enjoyed this movie. But it's about as forgettable as...
any movie.
Yeah, and in some ways it's even more forgettable than his good movies.
Yeah, because it's got such a star-studded cast and it doesn't stand out.
Yeah, like I was thinking about this movie and like... Equalizer I only saw once, but I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Even though like Equalizer is a smaller movie than this, but Equalizer is like very entertaining. It's like it's just it like does what it's supposed to do. London Has Fallen, the first time I saw it, really like as cornball as it was, London Has Fallen kind of stuck with me. I remembered it. I wanted to watch it again. I insisted we do it on the show. This movie, and granted, it is always difficult to watch a movie the first time and have like a really strong feeling on it.
Absolutely.
But I really, going into the movie, I was like, I wonder if he's going to try to make this a little bit more of a drama, have a little more depth, maybe a little more weight. But it was just action that was forgettable. Mm-hmm. Good performances from a bunch of really sweet actors, and like a bunch of really forgettable scenes. Like, it just kind of felt like popcorn.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's the biggest movie Fuqua's ever made, too.
The budget is pretty damn big, and, you know, for what it is. And Fuqua, I mean, Southpaw is big in a different way. Yeah. That one was, like, gunning after an Oscar big.
Yeah.
Which how that went. Yeah. yeah, man, I it's funny when you're saying all that. I think I want to change what I said in the beginning, because I looked at it from the point of view of someone that's never seen or doesn't remember Magnificent Seven. And it's true, when movies get remade and the remake isn't that good and the original isn't like Best Picture nominee or winner,
yeah,
it does kind of make a discredit to it. It's like, the first one was fine, so they tried to remake it. Second one was fine, so they're going to remake it again in 20 years, you know? Yeah. And then it's just going to become a joke. So yeah, that is kind of a bummer, and I think that...
Because, like, it's like Point Break gets a bad remake, but, like, it's not like the original Point Break is regarded as anything other than, like, a super sweet
one of the greatest 90s action movies.
It's like, that's like a movie that you're having a beer with a buddy, and you're like, that's like my favorite movie for X, Y, and Z cheesy reasons that I watch on cable. It's not like Magnificent Seven, where you're like, well, Seven Samurai is a true classic, and it was remade, and it's this classic movie. It's like, and this is what we got?
Yeah, I mean, I think if in 5 years from now you're like, hey, dude, you want to watch Point Break? You're not going to be like, which one? And if you did, I'd hit you.
Yeah.
And the same thing, 5 years from now, when people go, you want to watch Magnificent Seven? They'll go, well, which one?
Yeah.
For real. They actually will, because it's like, there's no clear, like, oh my God, you have to watch the original. Yeah. It's one of the great, it's like, if you're going to ask me to watch Old Boy, and you say which one to me, I don't even want to talk to you.
Yeah,
because the original is one of the greatest movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And yeah, anyway, so I like that thesis statement.
Well, because also, so I'll give you another Western, and this is the one that really, when I thought about it, kind of proved my point.
Tombstone. No, I'm joking.
True Grit.
Mm-hmm.
The original True Grit is regarded as one of the all-time classic greatest Westerns ever made. Right? Like, John Wayne. Like, it is at the top of the list. And they got the Coen brothers to remake it.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally different. When you put the Coen brothers, and it's got Jeff Bridges, and you're putting, like, Matt Damon, and like, they're...
And this is, like, Jeff Bridges, like, gunning time, too.
Like, right after Crazy Heart.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm talking, like... These guys have won Oscars and been nominated for Oscar after Oscar after Oscar.
And they're known as two of the greatest storytellers of this generation of movie making.
So when you remake True Grit, even though that movie missed the mark for a lot of people and True Grit was just kind of forgettable, the attempt is there. And the attempt is there by those guys because the original is such a classic.
And they're paying it massive respect by bringing these people onto it.
Now, I talk a lot of shit about Antoine Fuqua, right. And I will walk up to that guy at a party and I will shake his hand
for what
he's done.
Because he makes enjoyable, entertaining movies.
I love the shit out of his movies.
Absolutely.
But it's just different. It's like when I watch this movie, and that's why I'm saying it's not about this movie being bad, it's about this reflects
which
the original movie.
Which we're not saying this movie's bad.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It reflects that the original film is much more of a trashy popcorn movie than I think anybody realized.
Yeah.
That's what
okay.
I think it is.
Wow. I feel bad because if Antoine Fuqua were to ever watch our show, he would just think, these guys fucking hate me.
No.
And we don't hate you, but my thesis is going to sound like I just don't respect you, which I do. And that is that Antoine Fuqua is the Michael Bay of action dramas.
Okay. That's great. It's 100% true.
Right?
It's because he tries to take his movies a hair more seriously than Bay does.
Exactly. He tries to take his movies a hair more seriously. They go a little slower. There's a little more storytelling. There's less tits and ass. There's less explosions and shiny things.
Yeah.
But that's because he's trying to make a drama.
Yeah.
Whereas Michael Bay, it's the same thing, though. He goes with his action movies, and he takes them to this next level with all the filters and all the shots, like rotating shots. And I think they're both great. I think that Michael Bay is... put into the exact category that he's supposed to be in, and that is why people look at him and go, Michael Bay is sweet. You know why? Because he makes Transformers, and he makes Transformers bigger and better and shinier.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the thing, is that Bay is the original. He's the OG. Like, if you talk about these kind of movies, because he's made the biggest, he's made the most, and he's just gotten away with it for years. They've made money forever. It's like we used to talk that way about Tony Scott until we realized how much of a fucking genius he was.
He really is the greatest director of all time.
But like, he's in the same conversation with these guys. It's sort of like Fuqua wishes that he was Tony Scott to me.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is.
Or Fuqua is the perfect hybrid of Tony Scott and Michael Bay. Or yeah. Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I can't imagine. You know that Southpaw was originally supposed to star Eminem?
Yes. I remember. I think Jason told me that. I don't remember. Yeah.
So it's like, if they had made Southpaw and it had starred Eminem, it literally would have been everything about, like, that would have been Antoine Fuqua to the max. Let's put 50 Cent in the movie and also Eminem in the movie and also bill it like it's going to win Oscars.
Yep.
Like, I guess maybe it got that billing a little bit more because it's Gyllenhaal.
Right, but you just described Training Day. Let's throw Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg in and throw in Denzel because he's going to win an Oscar.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing.
Yeah. And it's like, he's... Fuqua's a guy that I've got my eye on because my opinion of him over the last 5 years has changed so drastically. It's like I've learned to love and hate him so much more.
Exactly.
It's like I used to be so much less impassioned about it, but as he's made everything from Shooter on was just like shaking my head. It was like Shooter, London Has Fallen, The Equalizer, Magnificent Seven, and Southpaw. That's the five movies that have come out since Shooter.
And they're so sweet.
Yeah, like the... So you're just like, all right, I totally get it because now I understand what I'm getting into. Right. Now I no longer have to explain to people why Training Day is not that good. Now it's the proof's in the pudding, man. Go watch that movie.
Look at everything else that he's done. Go rewatch Training Day.
I used to have to stand on my soapbox about that movie so much harder than I have to now.
Of course.
But also, now that I feel like it's kind of like the Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady argument, it's like, it's the whole like, once people stopped fighting anymore that Peyton had a chance to be in the same conversation as Brady, once they just gave up...
There's still people that argue that, but yes.
Well, I feel like the general consensus...
Absolutely. It's Tom Brady and Belichick are greatest quarterback, greatest coach, greatest coach-quarterback combo.
People came around on it. Now, as the huge Tom Brady fan, I just get to be like, yeah, I like Peyton Manning. I'm a fan of him. I am a total fan of Peyton Manning, whereas I used to despise him because I used to feel like I had to argue against him.
Yeah, so now it's like, I like Antoine Fuqua's movies. They're fun.
Exactly. They're fun. I'm a fan of Fuqua.
All right, let's move on. Those are great. Guys, let us know if you have any thesis statements. And again, we don't dislike Antoine Fuqua or this movie. These are just our thoughts.
All right, guys, we're going to get a fist bump moment. If you guys watch or listen to the show every week, you know exactly what this is. This is that moment in the movie when something hot happens and you're just like, this is so fucking sweet.
Yes!
Like, yes! I get to watch the rest of this movie. You want to call your buddy and just tell him how pumped you are. You know, we've gotten a couple complaints over like the last year about that we explain these rules every single episode.
That's the only reason we do the show. Yeah,
but then also somebody tweeted the other day and said, I love...
how excited we are every single time. It's because every time a fist pump happens in a movie, it's exciting. And it should be. And you should be excited to talk about it like we are.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know if you're going to have the same one as me. I'm assuming you do.
I'm sure we will.
Because in the theater, the minute you see Vincent D'Onofrio in this movie, it's a literal like get up and cheer moment.
Yeah. It's like a get up and cheer belly laugh moment where everyone in the theater kind of looks around at each other like... Awesome.
But I think it's totally intentional.
Oh, absolutely.
100%. Basically, D'Onofrio, he's the sixth guy. He's the sixth guy that they meet out of the seven.
Yep.
And all the first five you meet are like, Denzel's a fucking badass. Pratt's like a super sweet sidekick who's like good with his guns. Yeah. And he's essentially Han Solo. You have like...
You've got the Mexican badass who's like kind of a wild card, but he's actually super cool.
Yeah, and you've got Ethan Hawke who's like... sharpshooter, the angel of death or whatever.
Yeah, old friends with Denzel.
And you've got the guy who basically is identical to Jin from Lost.
So awesome.
He's pretty and I'm hoping that doesn't sound racist, but I literally thought he was the same actor.
And he's the guy that was just in Terminator Genesis.
Yes.
Yeah. Billy, he's Korean.
He might have actually been my favorite actor in the whole movie.
He's sweet.
He was super sweet in this.
And I also love like there's so many times in... Okay, so here's a great example. Black Widow in the Avengers movies, you're like, she's dead. She should be dead, die, dead, done, no chance.
Yeah.
All the time. And it's because she's, like, fighting with her hands against, like, a superhero, right? What's sweet about Billy is it's that same thing they do in all these movies where they're trying to make one guy really sweet with knives.
Yeah.
Like a knife thrower, knife fighter, because everyone's got guns.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
He was great.
It's awesome. The knives are so deadly, and the he's hairpin. So accurate. The hairpin, yeah. He's great. And then, okay, so back to what we were saying. So the sixth is when D'Onofrio.
So, because the first five are all, like, in shape-ish.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Denzel's a little out of shape at this point, but, like, enough.
Did you think it was going to be the brothers for a second?
No.
That had the gun?
No, 100%. No.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no question.
Yeah.
And D'Onofrio just comes, like, rumbling in off screen. And, like...
Well, the dude's standing there talking, all of a sudden he gets hit with a hatchet.
And D'Onofrio's like, ah! He's running, and he's wearing, like, a bear skin.
Yeah.
And he's, like, lumbering. He's such a huge man.
And he just crushes the guy's head with his boot.
And I just... It was just a... I just couldn't stop laughing. It was, and then he starts talking.
He's like, I've been tracking those guys for 3 days.
Yeah. Like, he made this choice to have, like, the high-pitched voice.
Anytime that he talked, you lost it in the movie the whole time.
I couldn't help myself.
Brilliant.
It was like listening to Bob with tits from Fight Club.
It was.
Yeah.
It was just like that, but higher pitched and more crackly.
And without tits.
And being just gigantic.
A bear of a man, literally.
Literally.
So, yeah, that would...
That was mine, too. And actually, my other fist pump, because right when that happened, I looked over and was like, that's my... You're like, yeah, that's our fist pump.
Yeah, there's no...
The other one was another D'Onofrio moment. And it's when they go to take over the town the first time.
Yeah.
And you and I both love this part. It's when he spears the dude on the horse from off the deck. So there's something brilliant about watching a gigantic man that looks... fat, out of shape, and unagile to move like Chris Farley and Vincent D'Onofrio do.
Yep.
And to see him just like scurry across that deck and launch off, just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I would say, Pratt has a bunch of sweet lines. None of them really are fist pumps for me. They're mostly like... I guess the other fist pump moment is when Denzel's like, I'm more than happy to cooperate. But I can't say the same for my compadres. And then you see each of the guys, like... they're each, like, walk out from, like, behind the corner or whatever.
They're all behind, like, posts. Yeah.
Yeah. And that guy was like, yeah, shit's about to go down.
Yeah, that was good.
So that would be my other first
moment. I loved the moment when... It might even be one of my favorite lines, but I don't think it is my favorite, so I want to talk about it now. It's after you... Because every guy kind of has their introduction to them being awesome.
Yeah.
And Chris Pratt's is after he leaves the card game and he gets held up for the money and stuff by the guy and his brother. And he does this long card trick, and he ends up shooting the brother, kills him, and then he shoots the guy. Or he does, you know, he messes up the guy. What is he, where does he shoot? Does he shoot him?
He shoots his ear off.
Yeah. And there's this moment about this sincerity that we always talk about with that, like, leading man charisma.
Pratt's got spades,
man. He's just joking around, having fun, da-da-da. He's kind of badass. But then he says this one line at the very end.
Yeah.
And it was that moment where I was like, man, you do have it, because that's awesome. And he goes, he's all joking around, he's like, yeah, I really wish I didn't have to kill your brother, but he shouldn't have touched my guns.
Yeah.
It just got real serious, like, no joking,
yep.
And then it's cut, and I was just like, that guy.
Yeah.
I like that guy.
I wrote that down as well.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I think Pratt has really, vaulted into that conversation now where he's just like, he's that guy. He's the guy right now.
Yeah, he is magnetic on screen.
Yeah, guys, you know, it's hard to be one of those guys, and you don't get to be that guy very easily. People get it for a year or two, and obviously the greatest of all time are the ones who just do it for years, repeatedly.
Yeah.
But Pratt seems to be on a pretty nice roll right now. And
he's not oversaturated, which is perfect, because our next thing is our star profiles. I didn't realize that he really doesn't oversaturate himself in the market.
Yeah, not yet. Have you seen the trailer for Passengers yet?
No.
That's going to be the
one. That's the one, yeah, because it's him and Lawrence, and I already feel like she's already doing it.
Oh, no, not like the bad one. That's going to be the one. That's going to be like the Pratt movie that people are like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's going to be so good.
Are we talking about the same one?
Passengers, it's the one where they're like...
It's him and Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And it's like they're put into hibernation for like 100 years with like the human race to go to like another planet or something like that.
Right, right.
But they wake up like 80 years early and just the two of them.
And it looks insane.
Well, and the script had been like kicked around for a long time in Hollywood as like one of the scripts, like one of those blacklist scripts, like the one everyone wanted to make.
Right.
And finally they put them in it and they started making it, and like there's just a lot of excitement. The movie just looks like it's going to be awesome.
I hope it is. I hope it is for him, because I don't dislike Jennifer Lawrence and I love Chris Pratt. So
Yeah, I think
I hope so.
Very good. But speaking of Denzel first, before we get to Pratt, talking about star profiles, where they're at in their career. So Denzel, as we've talked about now, because we've done, how many now is this? Have we done more Denzel or more Cruise movies? Wow, I think Denzel might have beaten Cruise on our list now.
This chair is absurd.
this chair is absurd.
We got Training Day.
Yeah, I mean, you got Training Day, you got Deja Vu, you got Mag 7.
You got Pelham.
You got Pelham, you got Man on Fire. You got Crimson.
Holy shit. And you know what? There's one thing about Denzel that I feel like when we talk about Cruise and some of these other guys, I could just talk about Denzel forever. I mean, I could talk about Cruise forever too, but I don't feel like we like murder it with Denzel like we do with Cruise, you know?
Yeah.
It's like overkill.
I mean, maybe that's all of them. I think that's the six we've done.
So with Cruise, you've done MI...
Three, four, and five.
And Minority Report, so that's four.
Edge, Minority... Five. Oh, yeah, he beats him. Because Edge, Minority, Reacher...
Oh, yeah, Reacher.
Samurai.
Wow. So they're definitely the guys we've covered the most on this show.
Is it seven each is what we've done?
It could be tied. I think it's tied. Top Gun.
And Top Gun.
Yeah. No, I think Cruise wins. What a shocker.
Yeah. Eight Cruise and seven Denzel. 15 of the 73 movies.
Hey, man. They've made some of the 15 of the best action movies in the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah. And it's only going to get worse because we've got Jack Reacher 2 coming up
and Equalizer 2.
2 weeks. That's not until 2017.
I don't care. Yeah. okay, so Denzel Washington here. We got Flight in 2012.
Which I like a lot. I think Flight's very good.
Very good. He got the Oscar nod for the first time in a decade for that.
Yep.
Two Guns in 2013. And Equalizer in 2014, which is honestly becoming one of my favorites.
So I've just seen Equalizer once. I should clearly watch it again.
It just keeps popping up on HBO.
We haven't done it on here yet.
No, I know.
And that'll be coming up soon.
Yeah.
I guess we could wait all the way until... We'll probably wait on it a while just because we've hit two Denzel in 3 weeks now.
Yeah, I don't want to kill off all the Denzel movies.
Yeah, we got to save it. So we'll do Equalizer eventually. But Two Guns I didn't watch, did you?
No.
Yeah, I just, for whatever reason, I avoided it.
Two Guns and Safe House are two, like, Denzel movies that I was just like, they just disappeared for me.
It came and went, yeah. But they're movies that should be probably watched at some point.
People love Safe House.
Yeah, it's a popular one. And Two Guns I heard nothing good about. But
no, nothing. Who's in that?
Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah.
Tim and Wahlberg.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that's the one where on set, that was the movie that on set Wahlberg got the idea for Lone Survivor. So,
okay.
So, but yeah, we've talked about this a lot. You know, guys that, because Denzel's in his 60s now. So, like.
It's only until the very end that you, when he's sitting on the horse after he's taken off his coat, where you're like, damn, you look fat.
Yeah.
And like out of shape. And
yeah.
Yeah. But
he just doesn't have.
He rocks it the whole movie.
He just doesn't have to be.
He's never had to be in shape. Like that type of dude.
I mean, even. Like he was like in shape back in the day.
Yeah, like Crimson Tide, he's clearly in great shape.
Yeah.
But like he was never one of those dudes that just was like, I need to have a six pack and I need to be shredded all the time. And
no.
I mean, that's because he's an incredible actor.
Amazing actor. And he's at that point in his career now where he's like a caricature.
Oh,
he's
absolutely.
Just like, he's just like Denzel playing Denzel.
Right. He's just a badass because he's Denzel Washington.
He just gets to do that. Yeah. So but this is phase three of Denzel's career. Like Phase one is all the 80s stuff. It's Malcolm X. It's Glory. It's Devil in a Blue Dress. It's all the shit that leads up until sort of like the Crimson Tide. He starts to make that foray into action movies and into the mid-90s.
Yep.
That's like the first time. And then at that point, he's really gunning for the lead actor Oscar. And he spends the next 10 years. And it's right around the time that he wins for Training Day. It's like the next several years become like just commercial. And that's when he made the next four Tony Scott movies.
Right.
Was between 2003 and 2009.
Like all of those movies in there that are Tony Scott and not, you know.
Everything from John Q, Antoine Fisher. Yeah, Man on Fire, Taking of Pelham, Unstoppable, Deja Vu. Just movie after movie. And you know, American Gangster is thrown in there as well. Mm-hmm. But I think we're now into the next phase of Denzel Washington. Where he's no longer like a guy who's on the forefront of like teenagers' minds. Like he's not a current enough guy. So a movie like this, I mean, if you look at these last few,
it's like movies for us.
Flight is Zemeckis. Flight's Zemeckis.
Zemeckis, yes.
But that's like an Oscar movie.
Yeah.
No teenager's gonna see that. Two Guns is like Denzel and Wahlberg, and that's 13. And like they tried, it didn't work. Safe House was a flop, essentially, in terms of, like, people don't talk about
people
it.
People liked it, yeah.
Equalizer is loved, but was not, like, a hit. Not a not in a hit like this movie could be.
If it wasn't Denzel and Equalizer, they wouldn't be making another one.
Right. And then this movie. So he's kind of in this phase now where he's, like, making the movies that I guess he wants to make, or I guess he's, like, the movies that he can make, but he's obviously still A-list.
Yeah, he's definitely... I mean, Denzel will never... not be A-list. I love speaking like that. He will never not be an A-lister. But I think he has that one more phase in his career. At least I really, really hope so. I think he rides this for a few more years.
You're talking like the Paul Newman phase?
Yes. Yeah. The awesome, like, old, gray, grizzled Denzel that wins another Oscar that for a movie that you watch it and you go, oh my God, that is one of the greatest performances I've ever seen. Not like... Remember, the Titans was great, and so was Hurricane, so let's give it to him for Training Day.
Yeah.
No, like, an incredible performance.
So, spoiler alert, guys, later in the show, we're going to do a segment, and it's going to be top three remakes we think Denzel would absolutely slay in the lead role.
Right.
So, teasing
action
that.
Action movie remakes. Correct?
What did I write down? Ish. I mean,
okay.
In the category. One of mine, just for the record, is a thing you're talking about. I can't wait to get there. So
okay.
Tune in, guest states. Stay for the rest of the show, and we'll get to that towards the end. So let's move on to Pratt a little bit, talk about where Pratt is. So Gem and the Holograms 2015, I didn't see. Did you?
Neither did I.
Kind of came and went as far as I was
concerned. Yeah, I didn't know anything about it.
Jurassic World in 2015, Guardians of the Galaxy. This is the big Pratt like moment. Like,
yes.
2014, 2015, those two movies are like the huge ones. Guardians is like a career defining movie for Chris Pratt.
It's a career defining role, everything. And the next one, it's gonna be gigantic. The second Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, the first Guardians is like Star Wars, basically.
Yeah,
it's pretty
for
much
for the younger generation. Absolutely,
it's like got the formula, everything, the characters. It's like, and Pratt's just a great leading man. It had humor, everything. That movie kicked ass.
It's very good. It's every time. It's one of those ones. Every time you watch it, you're kind of reminded of
how good it is.
Surprised how good it is. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was like, man, talk about it. As a kid growing up as a comic book fan, the Guardians of the Galaxy. And that entire like subgenre of Marvel comics that got popular in the late 80s and early 90s was always kind of like, this is so zany, this could only work as comic books. Like,
right.
This is never going to cross over and be something that people like. Like, so the next Avengers movies that our buddy Matt is going to go work on, it's the Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, there's like the whole entire huge plot line that's... Basically, if you guys have ever read the comic books, it's like Thanos and all this stuff.
It's insane.
It's awesome. It was in the early 90s, the Infinity Gauntlet was like a very popular comic book storyline. It's really good. But from the Infinity Gauntlet came the Infinity War, the Infinity Crusade, all of the stuff with like Drax and like all the shit from the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff. Like that whole like sort of weird space pirate alien genre just like it got really popular in comic books. But I could never have imagined growing up when I was buying those comics, like quarter comics, like old back issues in bins, that someday that was going to be like the defining Marvel movie. Like the two that have come out that were the defining ones, I would say, are Avengers and Guardians. Like the Iron Man movies were all super popular, and like the Captain America movies were super popular.
Well, Iron Man kind of started it all, but yeah, I agree.
But Avengers was that one, and then Guardians was like the surprise hit that people were like, this movie is just so good.
I didn't think it was going to be that good. I remember thinking, I was just like... But that's what's so cool about CG and technology when it's not abused, is you can make things come to life that you could have never imagined seeing on screen. But this whole conversation with Chris Pratt and where he's at in his career and how awesome he is in this movie, I think sparks a nice, fun little top three for us.
Okay, what do you got?
And that top three for me is top three sidekicks.
Okay.
In films, I don't know, do you want to do action? I don't know if you do or don't.
I did. I chose three that were from films that we've covered on the show. So
I believe I did as well. Let me double check really quick.
I'm gonna throw in my number one just because I think it's... there's almost no chance that it's not on your list because
I don't know. My list is pretty obscure.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because my number one is like the obvious, it's the obvious comp to Pratt. And that's
Doc Holliday. Okay. I like Tombstone. That. Yeah, of course. That was the first one that popped in my head.
Yeah,
I didn't use it because I knew you would.
It's like one of my favorite characters of all time. Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday in Tombstone is just so good. It's just, his lines are just amazing. Everything he says, Johnny Ringo. Yeah.
So my sidekicks, I'm trying to decide what order I want to go in. All right, here we go. So my third sidekick is going to be Cicero from Gladiator.
Cicero, huh?
Cicero and Proximo and the German guy. It's a combination of all... It's like his supporting army around him. Because they all sacrifice their lives to save him for the greater good. Cicero gets shot with arrows and hung. The gigantic German gladiator gets shot with arrows and, like, stabbed with spears.
Right.
And then Proximo gets executed.
Yep.
And it's just... How often do you get to see the ultimate sacrifice given by a sidekick?
Yeah, not too often. Those are good. I will go next with Gosling from The Nice Guys.
So are you were, it sounds like you were thinking more of like Chris Pratt playing these roles.
No.
I think I could totally see him playing all these roles. I think he'd be awesome.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Holiday's a little bit of a stretch because he'd play it differently.
Right.
I think. I haven't seen him take that kind of a...
John Ringo.
I haven't seen him just take that kind of like a risk yet.
Gosling and Nice Guys is fantastic.
That movie's so good.
It's out on Redbox now. Yeah. Okay, guys, I just saw someone write that they'd just watched Last Samurai. So go watch our episode covering Last Samurai and go watch The Nice Guys and then go watch our episode covering it because, God, it's so good.
Nice Guys was my favorite movie the whole year.
Same, still.
And Gosling, just that that opening scene when he's in the bathtub and he's got written on his hand, "You will never be happy." He's just brilliant in that movie.
Him trying to break into the door still. Okay.
That's a lot of blood.
That's a lot of blood. Got to be crafty. Got to come up with stuff on your own. My second one is Ken Watanabe in The Last Samurai.
Okay, that's a good sidekick.
That's a good one. It's a great one. I like my sidekicks to die.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed that.
Apparently so. Speaking of sidekicks dying, Dylan!
Dylan!
You son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch.
He becomes the sidekick in the end.
He does that redeeming...
He doesn't start out that way, but by the middle of the movie... when he decides to switch, "We've been looking for this place for months. My men were in that chopper."
He's the bad guy through the first half because you don't have one.
Yeah, totally.
And then it's Predator.
"I didn't know about an operation in this area. Nobody told me much."
I'm telling you, you need to reshoot that whole movie shot for shot.
Yeah.
Just with you.
I can do both characters.
You could.
This cabinet minister, does he always travel on the wrong side of the border?
Gets better and better
every time.
My next one is a shout out to our episode next week.
Okay, Legolas?
No, not Legolas.
Samwise Gamgee.
Samwise the Brave. How can you not put Sam on your list of sidekicks? He's the greatest sidekick ever, all times, hands down. No one beats him.
Share the load.
I could just hold it for a while.
Lumber spread.
He took it! Okay,
it's
anyway.
That thing. Gollum.
That's a good one.
It's a good one. It's a really good
one. I'm very curious to see what your last one is.
No, that was my three.
Oh, that was your three. You went first.
Holiday.
Okay,
Dylan,
yeah. Yeah, mine's... Yeah, all right.
All right, let's talk a little bit of production development, the team involved in this. So, guys, we talked about Fuqua quite a bit. So, for those of you that are wondering, Fuqua started out as a music video director, directed videos for, like, Tony Braxton, for, like, Stevie Wonder, Coolio. Ended up making a film called Bait, and then followed up with Replacement Killers, which then ultimately got him Training Day in 01. Training Day is the movie that really blew his career up and fooled everybody into thinking that he was a drama director. And Training Day, for the record, is very entertaining.
It is.
Very entertaining.
It is very entertaining.
Our Training Day episode from a couple weeks ago, I like watched the beginning of it and was like, that's pretty funny. Like, that's pretty entertaining
it's
stuff.
It's a very good episode.
And I told you this, but I have a good friend, Spencer, from a company called Don't Make This Weird, and I work with him and Jose on some products for a different podcast I do, but we had a whole long conversation a few weeks ago about Training Day and how I have a distaste for that movie being regarded as a dramatic classic. And he was like, all right, well, you know, if you do it on your show, I'll watch the episode. He had never watched the show. And I sent him the link and I said, you should watch this. And we talked later and he was like, dude, I was dying laughing. He's like, it's like my favorite movie of all time, but I agreed with all of your complaints in the episode and I totally had a good time watching it. He's like, great job. And I was like, that's great, because it means we can cover movies people love, but at least cover them honestly.
That's what the show is all about. That is what this is all about. And you and I had this conversation so many times about whether or not we're movie critics and movie reviewers, and I didn't like that title, and I don't know how you felt about it originally, but when it comes down to it, that's what we are. That is our job.
Yep.
We watch movies and we review them, and if we're not going to do an honest review, then fuck us. Don't watch this show.
Yeah.
Why? I'm not going to lie to you about a movie and be like, oh, Training Day is the greatest thing. Denzel deserves an Oscar. No. We're going to give you an honest coverage of the film, and that doesn't mean that we don't like it if we don't think it deserved all the praise and accolades that it got.
Yeah.
And vice versa for movies that were completely ignored that we love, like Looper.
Yeah.
You know?
Looper's sweet.
So...
So Fuqua, that's kind of his thing. After Training Day, he really has gone on to a lot of those movies I named already, but he makes, well, we talked about him a lot today already. We can move on from him. I mean, if that's Fuqua's story, he's talented at making the kind of movies that he makes, and they're great for what they are. And if you like this show, he's probably like one of your favorite directors ever, because he directs like half the movies we're covering on the show. Talking about the producers involved, Roger Birnbaum and Todd Black,
good
as
boy,
well as
Todd Black and
Bruce Berman and Fuqua. So there's like six producers listed. The credits involved, I mean, both of these guys, there was not really a whole lot of rhyme and reason to the credits. They had both worked on a lot of stuff,
like
crossed
30 films together, right?
A lot of them had, and it wasn't even one of those situations where you look at the two and they've worked on a ton of stuff together. They'd worked on a few, but ultimately, like, Birnbaum had, like, some of the ones I wrote down were like Angels in the Outfield, Gross Point Blank, all three Rush Hour films, Unbreakable, Invictus, like Evan Almighty, Bruce Almighty, like he just a lot of different stuff.
I think when you get a movie like this with a cast like this,
yeah,
it's gonna have the producers that are involved in some of the biggest films in the last 10-20 years.
Yeah, those
like,
are big.
Always.
Yeah, I mean the other guy we mentioned, Todd Black, you know, his stuff like Antoine Fisher, Great Debaters, Equalizer, so he works with, and then he's also Pursuit of Happiness, 7 Pounds. So Denzel and Will Smith seem to be kind of guys that he's worked with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I noticed that he had worked with Brian Helgeland, because Knight's Tale, which is written and directed by Helgeland, and then also Taking of Pelham, also with Denzel, was
like
written by Helgeland.
Tale.
So yeah, I mean, these guys, they're pretty very, very, very successful producers, mm-hmm. but it's not like part of a team or a company where they've done, you know, these 9 movies that we care about. It's like kind of random.
Yeah, and before we get into writers, I wanted to say this really quickly, because James Horner did the music for this film.
Yeah.
Before he died, but the movie had... He composed the entire score during pre-pro because he was so moved and inspired by the script.
Yeah.
Which was... It's kind of... It's really cool. It's really cool that you got this kind of posthumous soundtrack from a guy that is considered one of the greatest composers of all time.
Yeah,
for his very last film that he hadn't even started filming yet. So that's kind of a cool little gift from James. The music was good.
Yeah, solid.
You know, I mean, it's exactly what you want in a Western type of movie.
Completely agree.
And the reason that I wanted to say that before we got into writers is because we've got a very special writing.
Yeah,
two writing credits in this.
We have Todd Black, the producer we just talked about, who partnered with Pizzolatto to work on the film.
Yeah.
And Pizzolatto, Nick Pizzolatto, for those that don't know, is the creator of True Detective.
Yeah.
Weird, 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 weird writer for this movie.
Very weird.
I was like so surprised. Like, so when I started doing the research on Pizzolatto, and I never interviewed Pizzolatto, but I interviewed Cary Joji Fukunaga, the other creator.
Right.
So the two of those guys were the guys that created True Detective. Pizzolatto wrote every episode of season 1 and season 2. The total disappointing bomb of season 2.
Have you rewatched it yet?
No.
I'm curious what will happen when I rewatch it.
Season 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably better than you remember.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's less of a disappointment. He also worked on the TV series The Killing before he did True Detective, which is like another sort of like noirish, crimey sort of thing. But then ultimately, and he's a published novelist, a poet,
mm-hmm.
and this is his first feature film credit. This is his first one.
Wow.
What
he does all TV, huh?
I just was like totally blown away as I thought about that. I was like, so what a weird thing. You take the rights to the original Magnificent Seven, you get the writer of True Detective to write it.
One of the greatest season maybe of all time, writing wise, on a TV show.
But such a slow, like
dark,
crime driven.
Yeah, creepy, yeah.
And then you get Antoine Fuqua to direct a Pizzolatto script.
A popcorn Western remake.
Yeah.
Pizzolatto script.
And at this point, it's not like there's any question what kind of a director Fuqua is.
No. And the writing for this film doesn't feel like Pizzolatto's either.
No, but it made... Once I realized that he was writing it, I started to pay a little closer attention to think about, like...
It made sense why a lot of... It makes sense why a lot of the dialogue, there are moments where you're kind of like, all right, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, like there's a couple lines. You know, Denzel has that line that he says to... Ethan Hawke, what we lost in the fire, I will find in the ashes.
Yeah.
Like, lines like that, where you're sort of like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of moments in the film where there's just great writing, kind of surrounded by crap because of the type of film it is. It's a popcorn action.
And scripts like this get a lot of rewrites as you go into production. There's too much money involved. Or, you know, when the girl says, what'd she say?
You seek revenge. She goes, I seek righteousness, sir.
But I'll take revenge.
But I'll take revenge.
Yeah, those are smart lines.
There was numerous lines where you and I looked at each other and we're kind of like, that was a really good line.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that Pizzolatto wrote this, but he's also Pizzolatto, for those that are interested. Season 3 of True Detective has not been greenlit, but he did sign on for a crime project with HBO that he is under contract with them through 2018 to produce content. So
wonder what that might be.
Yeah, I'll be very excited to see that. So let's move on through into critical.
Yeah, so this is produced by Sony in Colombia. It cost $90 million to make, which makes sense. You know, a lot of probably practical explosions and blood and things like that. No CG except for the end, which was one of the worst endings to a film. It doesn't ruin the film by any means. It's just completely irrelevant and shouldn't happen. It's one of those, it's like the end of Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
Where it's like a voiceover. It's the female lead's voiceover of the story of what happened as like, they look at the city from afar, and it's just CG, and it looks like shit. It looks like a video game.
I think that's her monologue is from the original film, I'm pretty sure.
I think it is, too. I think that's what I read, but just go out in a field and put some headstones down.
Yeah.
Do a real shot.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, $90 million budget. Opened September 23rd, 2016.
Which is
week.
Actually, like, 90 actually is smaller than I would have expected.
I was surprised, too, because it's all star power.
Yeah.
You got to pay those guys. $37 million domestic, 21 worldwide for a gross total of 58 million so far, and it made 34 on its opening weekend at number one.
So I mean, this movie it'll do very well.
It'll do very well, and I kind of want that to lead into our AMA question of the day because it doesn't happen a lot. We don't get a lot of Westerns anymore. So we have our hashtag AMA question, guys. We do it every single week. You can always tweet in at AMA Podcast and submit your question for the movie that we're covering that week. And today I decided to pick the hardest name to say. It's Steven Alzugari. I'm so sorry if I butchered that. It's a new Twitter follower, at Alzugari1993. That's Alzugaray if you do want to find him.
And if you want to find us, you guys can find the podcast at AMA Podcast, just for the record.
Yes, and his question is, 1 to 10, how good was it as a Western? And the reason that I picked that question is because this is what it's supposed to be, is a Western. We don't get a lot of those anymore. And I feel like my ideal of what a Western is, I don't really even know anymore.
Yeah, I would say this would be my answer to that question. Below average significantly as a Western.
Right.
It's an action movie. It's not a Western. It has a couple. Its setting suggests that it's a Western, but it really. It's just okay. You guys want to watch a Western? Go watch Hell or High Water, the new one.
Yeah,
go watch that movie because that movie is as like slow and dark.
Yeah,
because
Westerns
like,
are exactly they're slow and they're dark and they're drawn out and there's so much tension building. You know, like the heightened tension moments of the good guy doing good things and the bad guy being evil. Is To Live and Die in the West? Is that what's the
living? You're talking.
That's like the shootout at the end of that is one of the greatest things ever, and it's all because of.
Wait, are you talking about Once Upon a Time in the West?
Is that the shootout? That's the famous shootout at the end of using the Arcade Fire video.
Once Upon a Time in the West has a pretty epic shootout.
My phone is like dead, or else I'd look it up right now.
Butch Cassidy has like the most famous shootout in a Western.
Not talking about Butch Cassidy. That one's great. But okay, so then at the end of this one, there's no shootout either.
Or the Wild Bunch, maybe, is what you're talking about.
No, one of the, I'm going to try to look it up and see if my phone has enough battery. But this film, what do you want at the end of the movie? Is you want a shootout between the villain and the hero.
Yeah.
But then it seems so. If it were to happen at the end of this film, where it was just a straight shootout, and Denzel just killed him right away, it would have been so dissatisfying.
Well, I think the ending was pretty dissatisfying.
Well, it was, but imagine if that was it.
Yeah, it'd be worse.
They had to drag it out longer because they didn't do a good enough job telling the story in the movie.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I think my answer to that question is below average, and I think if you think about like the old spaghetti westerns, if you think about like Unforgiven, like they're just. They're slower, they're darker, they're violent, but not in like a... This movie was just like a very fun popcorn action movie that happened to be set in a Western setting.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a Western to me.
No.
So I don't think that this movie renews interest in the Western genre. You know, if... I'm telling you, if Hell or High Water wins a bunch of Oscars, that's the kind of thing that will make people want to make a Western. Like,
yeah.
So that would be my answer to the question, and I recommend people seeing that movie. That movie's aged well in my mind too after watching it the first time.
The few people that I've heard talk about it other than you, they all love it. Yeah. They all say it's great. It's very good. Okay, so thanks again for your AMA question. Again, guys, that's at AMA podcast, hashtag AMA question. Next week we're doing it. Well, we'll cover that in a minute. critical reception has got a 7.2 on IMDb, which I think I'm okay with that. Maybe a 6.9 would seem more correct. I was just going to
say, 6.9 seems exactly right.
Yeah.
Or 7.0 exactly, maybe.
Yeah, it seems a little high. It's got a 61% by all critics, 46% by top critics, and 80% by audience. I think that's perfect. That follows our exact... our algorithm that we have, our formula that we have for movies that are good.
Audience
and bad
always
on the
likes
show.
These movies the most, and top critics like it the least.
Exactly.
Standard. Almost to the point of twice as much.
Yes. Brutal.
So let's move into our favorite line. Mm-hmm. Favorite line in the movie. I will jump in as the one I pointed out during the trailer. My favorite line is a Chris Pratt line, and it's when what's his name? Cam Giganet, who's like the henchman, the main henchman of Peter Skarsgård, is like, you know, he says something about like you'll be dead or something like that, and Pratt's like, and you'll be murdered by the world's greatest lover.
Yeah. Like, that was such a sweet line. Everyone lost it during that part. It's great. I think my favorite line is in the very beginning. It's during Denzel's intro, and he's like, oh yeah, how did he die? And he leans over, he's like, I whispered in his ear. And before he starts singing the song,
yeah.
The song kind of sucks.
Yeah, it was kind of lame.
But up until that point, he's like, you know, I killed him. And he's like, you know, he's dead. He's like, well, yeah, how'd he die? And then when he leans over and he says, I whispered in his ear. I wish it just stopped right there, and that was it. Because when he said that, I was just like, oh, that's cool.
I know. If he had said, I whispered in his ear, and then it was like, hand moved a gun, and he kills everyone, that would have been the move.
That would have been so sweet.
Yeah, it would have been super sweet.
But it wasn't.
Yeah. the world's greatest lover line is awesome. Then also you had the other one we mentioned. We mentioned a couple of them already. What we lost in the fire, we'll find in the ashes. That's a good line.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I seek righteousness, but I'll take revenge. Also, when Denzel says, been offered a lot for my work, but never everything. I think that's a cool line, too.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm, like, determined to find this, but I don't think I will. We can keep going.
So those are our favorite lines. Why don't you just put it away, Drew?
I will, man.
All right, guys. So we still have not come up with how we want to do this ranking system on the show. It's getting closer. We've had a couple conversations about it, so it'll be something that we deal with soon. But just be noted, by the time we do, we'll slot in the 10 or so that we've missed,
right,
and come up with a correct ranking.
But until then, we'll keep filling it in with these little games that we do have.
Yeah, so today we've decided to do, as mentioned earlier, three films that we think Denzel, in the starring role of the remake, would just absolutely slay.
Crush.
Because the thing is with Denzel, he's like Cruise in the sense that if you put him in a movie, it will probably be entertaining.
Do you see that Cruise is in talks to star in this?
Yeah. I thought that was funny.
That's great.
Denzel's better for this, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Cruise is a little different than Denzel in that sense. I think that Denzel's movie star charisma is better than Cruise's in some ways.
Ooh.
Like, I don't think I enjoy him more, but I think he's sort of, like, more relatable for people.
Yeah.
Cruise is, like, sort of abrasive to a lot of people nowadays, I think.
Yeah. He used to be more abrasive.
Cruise has to be in specific roles where I think Denzel can just sort of get away with anything.
Yeah.
It's like Denzel and Clooney have that same thing going for them. They can kind of just do anything.
Yeah, they can do anything, and they're the smartest guy in the room. It never gets old or tired.
Yeah.
You know?
So I'm going to jump in first. I think you're going to like this one. I'll save that one for last because it's the best one.
Okay.
First one I'm going to go with is Dirty Harry.
Okay.
I think you could remake Dirty Harry and Denzel could do it even now at his age. I think he could be like a grizzled cop who's a vigilante and just like takes out justice.
Okay.
I think like Denzel would be sweet if you remade Dirty Harry and you got... I mean, unfortunately, it would be Fuqua that made that.
Yes,
but
it
like,
would.
If you got, like... I would love it if you got, like, a really dark, dramatic director. I would love if, like, Aronofsky made, like, a remake of Dirty Harry starring Denzel
or
something.
That would be so sweet.
It'd be sick.
Yeah, or, like, Danny Boyle.
Yeah, something like that, so...
Man, that's tough. I don't know which one's my favorite. I'll go The Fugitive.
Oh,
sweet!
Right?
Richard Kimball!
He could be the greatest Richard Kimball ever.
He'd be amazing.
I came home and my wife was dead.
Yeah.
She was dead. I came in, there was blood on the floor.
Yeah.
And I'm innocent. You know, like, oh my God!
He would even have the moments like in Pelham when he's getting interrogated.
Yeah.
And he's like, can I duck off my jacket? Yeah. Like, that would be... Yeah, right?
Oh, that would be so good.
That's really good. That's really good. I'm going to go next with The Sting. I think he would play the Paul Newman role.
Yeah.
Like a caper heist movie classic. Like, I think Denzel playing the lead role in The Sting, he's like, you know, he'd be a great gambler. All the scenes on the train when he's gambling with, what the hell is his name, the big fat guy, whose name I can't think of right now.
I never want him to stop making movies.
Denzel?
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd be fucking great. The Sting should get a remake at some point, but because it won Best Picture, it should really be made by somebody who cares. And I think if you got the right guy to remake The Sting and Denzel played the Paul Newman role, it'd be excellent. I think, honestly, it would be Clooney, except that Clooney's already made Ocean's 11, so
right,
I don't think you can really do it. I think Denzel would have to do it.
You and I need to figure out how to get Denzel Washington in a Fugitive remake, and then we need to write and direct that.
Yes.
That would be so good.
So good.
All right. Next, I'm going to go with The Rock.
I went with The Rock!
Yes!
General Hummel,
right?
No, he'd be Mason.
Really? Okay, so I thought about Mason. I thought about General Hummel, and I was just thinking about his speech to his wife and all that. Like,
yeah.
You're down there, we're up here. Like,
I mean, he'd be unbelievable as Hummel, but I was just thinking, like, with his age now, that him as Mason would just be fucking great. Can you imagine how patronizing he would be to, like, a younger actor? Like, if you put Gosling into the cage role.
Oh, so intimidating.
Or if you put, like, Chris Pine, maybe.
Or even, I would love to see him and Michael B. Jordan do it. Just do a straight, like,
yeah,
young, old, like super young.
Yeah,
that'd be sweet. Oh, man, that, like, little hothead.
Well, that was my third, was The Rock.
Okay, well, I ruined it. Well, my third is Collateral.
Oh, wow.
Jamie
a remake
Fox.
Of Collateral?
Yeah, I'm saying if they were to redo it.
Yeah.
If he were to, because I'm not saying I want these remakes done.
Yeah,
I never
right.
want to see the remake of The Rock.
Yeah,
the Fugitive
right.
one I'm in love with.
Yeah.
But Collateral, if it would have been him instead of Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
I think he'd be so sweet in that role. A little older, a little like.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a difference, the age.
No, a little worn out on the job and just like a good guy. Good guy trying to get through his day, because we all know Denzel is so good at that.
I wonder if there's a chance that in 2004...
they talk to him.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, actually.
Not at all.
It's a couple years after he wins the Oscar.
It might have been because he's too big and Tom Cruise doesn't like being, like,
maybe
overshadowed. But then Jamie Foxx just won the Oscar,
right? He just won for Ray, right? Or did he win the next year for Ray? I think he won the next year for Ray. I think he won in 2005.
Okay.
And I think that's 2004.
Okay. All right. Okay, so that's our second top three. We had two top threes today.
Yeah, double top three.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one last thing to do in this episode, and that's going to be called The Pitch.
Donica, where are you?
Where are you, Donica?
Miss you, my friend.
So, I suppose we have
two more, technically.
Yeah, so...
Well, this and one more.
You guys are going to have to wait on the pitch. There's three action movie categories, guys. There's totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. Which of those three categories does this movie fit into? Usually those are defined by, say, movies like The Fugitive, which are totally legit. Movies like Face Off, which are kind of fall apart, hilarious, make you laugh unintentionally the whole time. And then movies that are right in the middle, like The Rock, Point Break, or Predator, which have a lot of intensity. They're driven by some pretty credible things, but you definitely laugh unintentionally at points.
Yes.
For me, I think this is the middle category. This is ridiculously legitimate because it definitely makes you laugh unintentionally at times. The darkness that goes along with some of this movie, like the fact that like half of the like lead characters die, spoiler alert,
yeah,
is like, I thought that was a good choice that they do that.
Yeah, it needed to happen.
Yeah, like, and I liked that it was, I thought that characters that died, it was like solid that they chose those guys.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if they had just killed Red Harvest, D'Onofrio, they had killed the Mexican guy whose name I can't think of
right
now.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
If they had killed all of those guys...
Right,
they,
all of the secondary characters, it would have been so lame.
And they had left, like, Hawk, Denzel, and Pratt. You'd be like, all right, guys, whatever.
Oh, wow.
But the fact that, like, largely irrelevant characters all survived except for Denzel...
Yeah.
I thought that was totally legitimate.
Yeah, it needed to happen. It really needed to happen. I'm glad that they didn't oversee that. I'm gonna have to agree with you and put it in the middle category.
Yeah.
I think. There's never moments where you're like, this is a seriously legit, real Western, holy shit, what's going to happen next?
Right.
And you're not just watching it like, oh my God. It's more like, oh my God, this is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So guys, getting back to The Pitch.
The Pitch.
We did a thing a couple weeks ago where we asked you guys to poll these movies. We did an episode 2-3 weeks ago, eight movies we wish we could do on the show that we never will. We swore we would never do this movie on the show, which is why this is not going to be a single movie episode, but a trilogy episode.
A trilogy episode.
Of the eight films that we did, and those eight films, just for the record, were Sunshine, The Other Guys, The Shawshank Redemption, Truman Show, Jerry Maguire, Boogie Nights,
Weatherman, and Lord of the Rings,
and the Lord of the Rings trilogy, in a head-to-head matchup over 3 weeks of rounds,
thousands of votes.
Yeah, thousands of votes. Lord of the Rings, the trilogy, won
is the winner.
So we will be covering next week the Lord of the Rings trilogy as a special edition episode. We're gonna come. We're gonna have to mastermind like a whole different format because it's three movies,
and we need your help too.
It's almost 9 hours of movie, so we have to come up with the best way to do it so we don't just like do a 3-hour episode. We need to. It probably will be totally different than a normal episode. Does not mean that we're going to start doing superhero movies or do The Hobbit.
This doesn't mean anything other than that we did one episode that sparked a vote, and this is the winner of the vote, and that's why we're doing it.
So that's the thing.
And guys, again, like with what you're saying, it is going to be a specialty episode. Other than hashtag AMA question and AMA angry or what are the other things we do.
I am angry. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not angry anymore. Give us other things. At AMA Podcast, any ideas, anything that you want to talk about that should be covered in Lord of the Rings. We're never going to talk about it again. It's one of the greatest trilogies of all time. There's got to be games and fun things and things that you guys want on the show.
So we will come up with our own whole system for that. It'll be awesome. Guys, thanks for tuning in, watching the episode today. Submit your hashtag AMA question. Follow along with us at AMA Podcast on Twitter. You can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me at Andrew Guy.
See you guys next week.
Adios.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.